Good morning and welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. I'm Jeff Snyder and this is BRN AM for Monday, November 23rd, 2020. And our top story today, how America banks. Joining me now to discuss this and a lot more is Karen Chu. She's Chief of Banking Research for the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, or FDIC. Karen, welcome to the program. Great to have you on the program this morning.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I want to get into this really important report that you, the FDIC, and I think the Census Bureau also put out. But before we begin, would you mind just talking a little bit about who the FDIC is and what its main responsibility is for consumers out there?
Well, if you've ever walked into a bank or walked by a bank, you've probably seen our logo on the door of the bank, maybe, or by the teller window. The FDIC is, of course, the nation's deposit insurer. We insure all deposit accounts up to $250,000. In the entirety of our existence, not a single depositor has lost even one penny from a bank closure.
And that's a very, very important stat. And I think people should be very confident and know that someone is supporting them should something, some bad circumstances or unknown circumstances arise. So Karen, let's talk about the report that you, the team authored. I think you also engaged with the Census Bureau to understand how America banks. What can you tell us? What are some key takeaways here?
Well, so we have great news, which is that in 2019, which is when the survey was conducted, a record 95, almost 95% of U.S. households were banked, meaning that they had a bank account or a credit union account. This is the highest percentage and number of households that are banked since we began conducting the survey in 2009.
And is there a correlation as to why the number continues to grow? I mean, obviously, it's important to put money away. You can earn interest. It's important to save. We highlight that all the time on the show. I know your organization also highlights that. But is there something that really helped continue the growth of that number?
Well, so that's a great question. About half of the increase in the number of banked households since 2017 was really due to improvements in the socioeconomic circumstances of U.S. households, in particular, improvements in their annual income, improvements in the volatility of that income, improvements in their educational level, employment status, and home ownership status.
So obviously those things would translate into people having a little bit more discretionary money to put away. And I think by and large, people understand that they need to save for a rainy day. Now, they may not always be in the circumstances to do that, but this is clearly, in my mind, and I'm sure in yours, a very positive result. Now, Karen, there are some people that are unbanked. So there are people that just do not have an account for whatever reason. Is this a lack of maybe education, or is this a fear of the banking system? Any thoughts as to why some people may just say, you know what, I'm comfortable keeping it in a safe in my house or under my mattress or somewhere else?
Right. So we actually, in 2019, 5.4% of U.S. households were unbanked, and that translates into about 7.1 million households. We asked these unbanked households the reason that they're unbanked. About 29% of unbanked households said that they did not have enough money to meet minimum balance requirements, and that was the main reason, the primary reason that they were unbanked. The second most commonly given primary reason for being unbanked was that actually that the household didn't trust banks. And that primary reason was given by about 16% of unbanked households.
So in terms of not trusting the system, I would suspect that this is probably due to their experience in the 2008 financial crisis and maybe some other crises that they've experienced. Some, you know, just sometimes people just are left with a bad taste in their mouth.
There are many reasons that people may say that they don't trust banks. In some qualitative work, focus groups that we have done, we've certainly heard from households where that have immigrated from other countries, where the banking system may have collapsed, and there are also households who people who didn't grow up in a household that used a bank, and so there's just a lack of familiarity with banks, which then could translate into not trusting banks. So there's a whole variety of different reasons that really underlie that response.
Yeah, and it's all personal preference, right? I mean, you're talking about why someone has an experience. There's nothing you can really do to change that. I would think, Karen, that the organizations like the FDIC and banking institutions would probably want to get out in the community. They're already doing great community work, by the way, to educate people about maybe how our banking system is very different than some of the emerging markets or some of the other developing countries out there that maybe have a less finite or some challenges with their banking system.
Yes, in fact, the FDIC has a financial education program called Money Smart that really engages with consumers of all ages, including we have a Money Smart for young people, we have Money Smart for older adults, and we have Money Smart for adults. And that really is a program that can help enhance financial skills of the participants and also help, create positive banking relationships and help educate people about the banking system.
And, you know, I mean, I'm in my mid-40s, and look, I forget things that I may not have experienced. For example, buying a home, I may not have experienced about going into my bank and taking a loan for a business reason. And so it's incumbent upon us, whether we are experienced, not experienced, to kind of check our ego at the door and say, look, I can take advantage of Money Smart. I can venture into my bank and learn something that I may not have learned, and that would be informative. I think it's a lot of it is it's a two-way street. So you've got to have the materials out there for people to consume, but people have to take it upon themselves to participate.
Right. And we have staff who do outreach who, who work with community groups to help reach unbanked populations, and work with banks to help reach unbanked populations.
Well, Karen, I want to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about how America banks and some other key takeaways. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN AM. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms, especially for the smaller businesses? I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy. Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you got to start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're going to change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network.
Hi, folks. Joe Namath here, and if you're on Medicare, this is important. You're now entitled to eliminate copays and get dental care, dentures, eyeglasses, prescription coverage, in-home aids, unlimited transportation, and home-delivered meals, all at no additional cost. Plus, your zip code may have coverage with the Give Back benefit that adds money back to your Social Security check every month. Look, with the uncertainty of the virus and vaccines, you need to get everything you're entitled to. Here's the bottom line. Call to get significant benefits at no additional cost and see if your zip code has coverage with the Give Back benefit. Millions of people have trusted the Medicare Coverage Helpline. You can too. Call now. It's free.
Call 1-800-924-3920. That's 1-800-924-3920.
Welcome back. We're talking to Karen Chu of the FDIC. Karen, thanks so much for staying with us this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me
Absolutely.
On the program.
Absolutely. And I love the whole conversation around Money Smart. Let's kind of dig a little bit deeper, because these are very interesting times in terms of the use of digital, the use of phones. Did the survey pick up what the shift is, how people are using banking, what people are using banking digitally?
Yes. In fact, we found that, you know, over the years, we've been seeing growth in the use of mobile, your mobile phone, to conduct banking, right? And in 2019, we found that mobile banking had really taken off. Use of mobile banking as a primary means of accessing your account more than doubled between 2017 and 2019. And in 2019, about a third of banked households said that they primarily used their mobile phone as, you know, for accessing their bank accounts.
And we don't yet have numbers, and I know you do this survey, I think, biannually, if I'm not mistaken. But I would suspect that during the pandemic, we saw a lot of people go cashless, including people who we would not think traditionally would use a device. So people like that are more mature, maybe that are used to going into a brick and mortar bank. Is that a correct assertion? I know you don't have the statistics around that, but is that correct?
I imagine that you know, we'll be looking at statistics in 2021. As you know, the survey is conducted every 2 years, but definitely we anticipate that, you know, the growth trajectory of use of mobile banking will just continue. Even in 2019 already, that doubling in that more than doubling in use was really a widespread phenomenon across almost all population segments, including for population segments that previously had very little use of mobile, such as, you know, households age 65 and above, for example. And, you know, given that there was already a big increase from 17 to 19, we continue to expect to see, you know, great big increases going forward, especially with the pandemic making, you know, people less willing to physically go to branches, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I like I didn't mean to jump on you on that like that. But I was going to say that I think, look, I like going to the bank. I just like to see a human being from time to time. But I think these are obviously very challenging times. And this is really, and I want to get your thoughts on this. This has really stimulated this pandemic, and this shift over to electronic has really stimulated banking interest in partnering with financial technology firms. I mean, everything I read within the banking industry, not everything, but a lot is around larger banks really trying to buy fintechs or partner with fintech companies to reach certain audiences and to get more people engaged. Is that something you picked up on in the survey?
Certainly. We asked about use of P2P payment services for the first time. you know, services where you can transfer money, for example, from one person to another in the U.S. And we found that it was our first year asking about it, but it's certainly a large percentage of households use it. And the usage of those services, maybe not surprisingly, skews a little younger at the moment anyway. And also the households that use it tend to be college educated or higher, have higher incomes. So certainly more, you know, along the first adopter type of household.
Well, Karen, I wonder if this has come up, and maybe this isn't come up necessarily in the survey, but one of the things that I've been reading a lot about is protecting data, protecting your personal information as well as your financial information. Is this something that maybe if you haven't explored in this survey that you might think about exploring in the 2021 survey?
Well, it was that particular question, you know, has become very relevant for, you know, in more recent years. It's certainly not something we have asked in the survey. We have explored a little bit people's house, you know, consumers' comfort level with using mobile. This was in 2015. We did a series of focus groups to better understand, you know, potential barriers to adoption of mobile banking. And certainly security concerns, you know, those concerns were mentioned quite a bit by households then. I think, you know, it seems that people may have become slightly more comfortable with using mobile for, you know, for all sorts of things, including banking, as the results seem to indicate.
Yeah, and I think it just comes down to we're going to have to be more vigilant in our savings practices, but also vigilant in protecting our own information and being aware of what we're sharing and how we're sharing information. Last question, Karen, and I'm not sure if this is something that you have necessarily covered in the survey, but we have seen an increase in digital currency. So we talked about the use of digital devices, financial apps, and financial technology. Are you seeing an interest at all in things like cryptocurrency or, you know, what commonly like Bitcoin or Ethereum as something that maybe it's a subset of the population is saying, hey, I'm interested in this. I want to invest in it.
Yeah, so we are not yet asking about digital currency. You know, we conduct a survey in partnership with the U.S. Census Bureau. It is, we have very limited time on the survey. And so, you know, we prioritize questions that, you know, that ask about products, for example, that, you know, a large enough share of the population may have adopted that that a survey could actually pick up usage. And cryptocurrency is not quite yet there in terms of adoption yet.
Absolutely. Well, Karen, this is very important information, very important work, and really enjoy reading the report and look forward to having you back on again to discuss your next survey. So until then, have a great rest of the week and we'll talk to you again very soon.
Thank you.
And that wraps up this episode of BRN AM. Have a topic of interest or someone you think we should talk to? Drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the news in retirement, markets, technology, personal finance, so much more, check out our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. So until tomorrow, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes.
Are you being audited? And do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Is the IRS threatening to take more of your money? Don't fight the IRS alone. The Tax Doctor is here to help you negotiate your tax bill and reduce your stress. The IRS can freeze your assets and seize your bank accounts, but you can stop these IRS actions. The Tax Doctor will work with you using our years of experience to represent your case to help you get the best resolution under the IRS guidelines. Help is here to deal with the IRS to reduce your stress. We've handled thousands of cases, so we know what we're doing. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, do not call the IRS alone. Call a Tax Doctor now for a tax emergency analysis.
Call 800-224-6439.